Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. Welcome to all of you, and today we're going to have a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3258. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3258, and Patrick, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, Madam Chair, a little bit. I will tell you. House Bill 3258 includes individuals employed in agricultural labor under the State Labor Relations Act. We have received a no revenue impact on the bill. We have not yet received a fiscal impact statement on that bill. I will check with legislative fiscal office after we get started.
Okay, thank you. That would be great. Thank you. And my first panel, I'm going to call Tim Bernasek, Mark Simmons, Kirk Peterson, and Ken Bailey to better explain this bill to us. And I apologize, gentlemen, for the not being adequate microphones, but I think we have done this before. So you want to just pull up a chair, Ken? I love farmers. We all do these things the same way. Okay. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Tim, would you like to start?
Sure.
Please, for the record, identify yourself.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Bernasek. I'm the General Counsel of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 3258. What the bill does is it extends the collective bargaining rules that are common in most industries to agriculture. How it specifically does that is it removes the current exemption in the state's private sector collective bargaining law found in ORS Chapter 663 that excludes agricultural workers and agricultural employers from that collective bargaining structure. Most industries in the United States have a structure regulating collective bargaining, how employers and employees and unions interact. They're very complicated laws, but I guess in summary, the National Labor Relations Act and Oregon's private sector law spell out employee rights free from intimidation and coercion from employers or unions. It provides a structure for how employees can choose whether or not they want to be represented by a union in their workplace. And it creates a labor board to oversee the election process and deal with potential unfair labor practices that could be engaged in by either employers or unions in this process. It basically provides rules for the road and how workers can come together if they choose in dealing with wages and working conditions with their employers. So how did it come that agriculture is exempt from these laws? Well, in 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was enacted, and there are literally thousands of pages of legislative history on the National Labor Relations Act. There's hardly a mention of agriculture. I think so. People will speculate why agriculture wasn't included, and I'll give you kind of my best guess. I think, for one, the National Labor Relations Act, they were dealing with labor strife in the automobile industry, steel workers, fairly large industries in the United States, and agriculture was primarily small agrarian family farms, and it just didn't fit at the time. And I think, frankly, the agriculture lobby, I think there's some merit to the argument, was strong and wasn't interested in this being included, and so it was easy to just lop that off. But again, a lot of that is up to speculation because there is not a lot of legislative history in that act. But the bottom line is, when the National Labor Relations Act was passed that covers most employers in this country, agriculture was exempt. Now, that doesn't mean that union activity can't occur or is prohibited in agriculture. It's just there's no rules to the game like there are in other industries. In the early 1970s, the Oregon legislature took up the issue of small private employers that didn't meet the jurisdictional threshold in the National Labor Relations Act and patterned a law very closely to the National Labor Relations Act for Oregon, and that's what's now found in ORS Chapter 663. But just like in the federal legislation, agricultural workers and employers were exempt from that structure. So what's happened is, over the course of history, unionization activity or collective concerted activity in agriculture has gone unregulated. And what we're asking you to do today is to remove that exemption and include agriculture in the state's collective bargaining law. Okay, so another question. Why is agriculture supporting this, and why is it something that we would be behind? And I know Mark is going to talk about some of the bigger picture issues, some of the boycotting activities and what it's meant to the agriculture infrastructure in the state, so I won't go into that. But I will talk about kind of the recent developments in Oregon from 1997 on to bring us current, because this body has been very active in this issue in trying to meet some resolution. I think it came in 1997. There was a court case, Rauda versus Oregon Roses, that many in agriculture still remember. And what Oregon Roses was about was dealing with kind of a piece of what collective bargaining would include. It dealt with concerted activities by employees and which activities would be protected and which ones wouldn't. The question was that what the court did, the Court of Appeals did, is created a tort of wrongful discharge for firing employees for engaging in concerted activities. But then it didn't, as courts don't do, it didn't talk about the specific nature of which concerted activities would be protected and which ones wouldn't be protected. From our perspective, certainly firing employees for coming together and just simply talking about wages and working conditions, that doesn't make sense. But certainly not being able to replace workers who engage in strikes during the harvest season, engaging in that type of concerted activity, that's more serious, and we felt that employers should have the ability to replace crews to make sure the harvest gets in, and Oregon Roses just didn't specifically deal with that. So the industry introduced Senate Bill 1205, which was an effort that simply legislatively overruled the Oregon Roses case. It passed the Senate, passed the House, but then was vetoed by Governor Kitzhaber. So we were back at it again in 1999 as the case was appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court. We said, well, we still need to deal with this, and we engage in discussions with the labor community, and at least where we ended up on the bill is saying, okay, what we need to spell out is which concerted activities should we protect and which ones shouldn't be protected. And the end Senate Bill 1115 in its final form would have protected all concerted activities engaged in employees as long as it didn't include a disruption of the workplace and the harvest. And once again, that bill passed the Senate, passed the House, but was vetoed by Governor Kitzhaber. But during those hearings, when we were in the House Judiciary Committee, the Oregon Farm Bureau committed, said, you know what, this kind of piecemeal approach at dealing with concerted activities by employees is only part of the picture. We need to talk about an overall structure. You know, how are we, if we're going to do this, let's talk about the whole thing. Instead of just concerted activities, let's talk about, you know, how what election processes should be in place and what is the bigger picture as far as unfair labor practices and how it would work like in other industries rather than this piecemeal approach. And so we did that. There were efforts by the Farm Bureau, the Oregon Association of Nurseries, the Christmas tree industry, and many, many others holding grassroots meetings from Multnomah County to Klamath County, from Marion County all the way out to Malheur County, talking about this issue. And there were a lot of concerns, a lot of questions, and but at the end of the day, after years of working this process, the agriculture groups, Oregon Farm Bureau, and many others have reached the consensus that we would be better off with a set of rules that everybody knows how concerted activities and collective bargaining should work in agriculture. So in 2002, special session, agriculture introduced the bill, House Bill 4025, that looks very similar to this bill. It took the road that states like Kansas and Hawaii and a few others have done, which is just treat agriculture like every other industry in the state and remove the exemption for agriculture from the state's collective bargaining law. And in what's becoming what was a familiar pattern, it passed the House, passed the Senate, but then was vetoed by Governor Kitzhaber. So one of the things that Governor Kitzhaber said in his veto message is, well, you know, we ought to look at maybe a special Agriculture Labor Relations Act and address it that way. So in 2003, a number of us drafted what was House Bill 2351, which was an agriculture-specific labor relations act, patterned after or similar to approaches that taken by the states of Idaho, Arizona, and California that have drafted a special labor relations act just for agriculture. And there was a very good process came out of that. We engaged in a series of negotiations with the governor's office, with labor, worked very, very hard, all of us, everybody, I think, worked hard to try and get something done by the end of the session, but we were not successful in getting it done. Since that time, we have continued in the interim, thought, well, let's continue these discussions. Let's get everybody around the table, see if we can come into the legislative session with a bill that everybody can support and move it through. And we've worked with, tried to work with the governor's office, with anybody that we could to try and marshal up the resources to sit us down and work, continue to work on this issue. And up until through the early parts of this session, trying to see if we could come to some agreement on this issue. And unfortunately, labor has not been interested in coming to the table to talk about this. And that is why we've introduced House Bill 3258. The issue is very serious for agriculture. It has been for a number of years. And the simple question that 3258 presents is whether or not farmers and farm workers deserve to be covered by the same labor relations law that workers in, that has worked for workers in other industries. If, as I suspect you'll hear later, there are concerns about the collective bargaining laws in general, then I think the bill should be dropped and we can discuss that and talk about it. But the bottom line is we need action and certainty now. Let's get a bill in place that treats us like everybody else, and if there are issues that need to be addressed, we can address that are specific to agriculture. Well, let's address them either in administrative rule or let's work on it in the interim and come together and continue this discussion along. But again, the narrow question is, do we want to put some rules in the road for workers and farmers and unions now to begin this process? I think in conclusion, I understand that this is not an easy issue. Labor law is complicated. However, the state of Oregon has a lot at stake. Agriculture continues to be one of the state's most important industries. And as I'm sure you're well aware, parts of the agricultural economy have been in bad shape for a long time. And when the agricultural economy suffers, it hits farmers and farm workers most directly. This state, Oregon, cannot reach its economic potential without providing farm workers the rights and farmers the stability of a fair and balanced collective bargaining law. Growers from throughout the state have come together to address this issue in a proactive manner, realizing that farm workers need farmers, and farmers need farm workers. House Bill 3258 provides concrete rules for unions, employers, and employees to follow in this process. This is certainly not the entire solution for the economic difficulties faced by Oregon agriculture, but it does help in our efforts to secure international markets, compete domestically, and address a host of other issues concerning both farmers and farm workers. House Bill 3258 is a good bill, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you, Chair Smith. My name is Mark Simmons. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. The nursery industry is the largest segment of agriculture in the state of Oregon and is a real Oregon success story. We have a unique climate here that allows it to prosper. We have over 20,000 employees in the nursery industry, and so this subject matter is of very great importance to us, and we would very much like to see some resolution. Agriculture today is in need of a fair and balanced framework of law that recognizes the relationship between employers, unions, and respectfully recognizes the employees' right to choose. Farming is a difficult business and profit margins are slim. The Willamette Valley was at one time home to many major food processors that packaged the crops on Oregon farms and shipped them to markets all over the world. Today, there's only one major food processor left. The most recent food processor to pull up stakes and go elsewhere said that Oregon is a high-cost place to do business with too much uncertainty and instability. There's been much disruption and unrest in the relationship between farmers, farm workers, and their union suitors here in Oregon. Farmers and the milk and food processors they sell their crops to today are in a difficult position and cannot sustain further disruption if we want them to continue to prosper and produce here in Oregon. Now, Oregon is an exceptional place to live. And as a matter of public policy, if we value the farm products produced here and the Christmas trees, grass seed, nursery goods, open space, and all the other benefits they provide, we really must see that this problem is remedied. We've crafted a bill, as Tim indicated, that extends to farm workers the same rights to organize that workers in all other segments of the economy enjoy. From my former experience as a local union president, I can tell you that the National Labor Relations Act and the Oregon State Labor Law that is patterned after the National Labor Relations Act provides a fair and balanced framework of law that advantages neither the employer nor the employee, nor the union, excuse me, if workers see a benefit in forming a union. It works very well and allows them to do so and to keep it in place. This is demonstrated by the fact that it works very well today for millions of workers across our state and across our nation. This bill provides that fair and balanced framework of law that provides an opportunity for workers and employees and unions to interact with respect and dignity. Above all, it respectfully recognizes the employee's right to choose. To choose whether it is in their own self-interest to form a union or not to form a union. Some have suggested that enacting a collective bargaining law for farm workers is the wrong approach, and that we should instead remedy this problem through a commission or through a private agreement. In my testimony, you have some information about a Dunlop commission in Ohio and Michigan and the failure of that effort. There was, for a time, a private agreement in force here in Oregon, and it did not work because of the union's failure to participate in the agreement in good faith. Furthermore, this agreement provided only one union option for farm workers. They could join up with a union that was party to the agreement or none other. This, in my opinion, as a former union president, is a direct affront to the dignity and intelligence of farm workers. Under the National Labor Relations Act, workers always have the right to choose. They have choices. By removing the exemption that excludes farm workers from state collective bargaining law, several unions could come forward seeking to represent the farm workers, and the farm workers could choose between them. We should show our respect for farm workers by providing them the same dignity, choices, and opportunities that workers in every other segment of the economy enjoy. And finally, the justice provided to farm workers by a commission or a private agreement is not justice under law. Now, there have been boycotts that Tim alluded to. The United Farm Workers and another organization who is more of a social activist organization masquerading as a union have gone to the marketplace and made unfounded claims of activities that have taken place on Oregon farms that in many cases are flat illegal activities. A framework of law for farm workers to operate under and unions to operate under in approaching farm workers about unions provides a legal structure and an opportunity to put up or shut up. Do the farm workers want a union or do they not? And there's a structure protected by law, and that's what we're asking you to give us today. So we're here simply asking that farm workers be allowed to take concerted action through a labor union of their own choosing, that farm workers be allowed to enter into collective bargaining agreements, and that farm workers be allowed to refrain from either of the above if they choose. And finally, that farm workers be allowed to do so under the rule of law, just like other workers can today. Please support House Bill 3258.
Thank you. Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Kirk Peterson. I am a shareholder with the law firm of Bullard, Smith, Jernstedt, and Wilson. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3258. The Bullard firm has represented Norpac Foods, Inc., which is a cooperative, for many years regarding its own labor relations and employment relations with respect to its own unionized workforce. I testify today on behalf of Norpac, not on behalf of its individual members or on behalf of the Bullard firm. Norpac doesn't employ any farm workers. It's governed by the National Labor Relations Act regarding its own unionized workforce. But in 1992, as you may know, Picayune launched a nationwide secondary boycott against Norpac because of one of Norpac's members declined, as it was legally entitled to do, not to recognize or bargain with Picayune as though it was the lawfully recognized exclusive bargaining representative of those employees. By necessity, Norpac became an active stakeholder in this ongoing debate about extending collective bargaining rights to agricultural employees. My remarks today are going to focus on one particular aspect of what collective bargaining is. It's the most fundamental aspect of a collective bargaining law. That's the duty to bargain collectively in good faith. under ORS Chapter 663, which is Oregon's Private Sector Labor Relations Act, which would be extended to farm workers under House Bill 3258, collective bargaining is defined as the mutual obligation of the employer and a duly elected representative of the employees to meet at reasonable times and places to confer in good faith regarding wages, hours, and other terms and conditions of employment. That duty continues until the parties reach an agreement or there is an immovable state of impasse. Neither party, however, is compelled to agree to any particular proposal or required to make a concession. The reason is that the freedom of speech, the freedom of contract, are constitutionally and statutorily protected. This model of collective bargaining applies to all private sector employment relations in the state of Oregon. The only exception in the state of Oregon is one small section of the private sector employees that don't have the right to strike, and that's for compelling public safety reasons that they don't have the right to strike. That's law enforcement officers, firefighters, and other emergency response personnel. For those strike-prohibited employees, the state's declared an exception to this traditional collective bargaining model because there's compelling public safety interests. This exception is known as mandatory binding interest arbitration. For those public safety employees, either party can initiate mandatory interest arbitration after a 150-day period of negotiations. An arbitrator then conducts an evidentiary hearing and ultimately decides what the essential terms and conditions of employment are. No contract is reached. No agreement has been made. Mandatory interest arbitration is not, by definition, collective bargaining. What it represents is a result that is a state-mandated terms and conditions of employment. Since 1957, it's been the public policy of the state of Oregon that the best interests of the people of this state are served by fostering meaningful collective bargaining, and that the settlement of issues arising out of collective bargaining are best served by conciliation, mediation, and voluntary arbitration. House Bill 3258 extends these fundamental collective bargaining rights to farm workers who have too long been excluded from coverage. However, there's no compelling need to quash the constitutionally protected freedoms of speech and the freedoms to contract in the process. Nor will mandatory binding interest arbitration foster meaningful collective bargaining, conciliation, or compromise. Rather, in NORPAC's view, it will promote and reward posturing as a prelude to litigation. The reasons that have been offered in favor of mandatory binding interest arbitration are essentially built on two faulty premises. One, that the agricultural employers in Oregon will bargain in bad faith. They will violate the law. Secondly, that the state of Oregon will be unwilling or unable to effectively do anything about it. Such pessimistic presumptions are not well grounded, and nor should they be the source of a policy choice to provide the basis for a roadblock for extending collective bargaining rights to agricultural employees on the same private sector framework that applies to all other private sector employment relationships. Committee, the traditional collective bargaining model that's found in ORS 663, which is modeled after the National Labor Relations Act, is a balanced structure that provides and encourages parties to settle their own disputes through negotiation and voluntary arbitration and conciliation. In the process, the freedom of contract is ultimately preserved, and no party is forced to have a third party or the government impose the terms and conditions of employment. NORPAC therefore endorses the passage of House Bill 3258. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Chairman Smith and committee. My name is Ken Bailey. I'm a cherry grower from the Dalles, and I'm a vice chairman of the Oregon Board of Agriculture. And I've turned in a copy of a resolution from the Board of Agriculture. And in that, we state some of the same issues that were pointed out this morning, that the whereas the farm workers do have rights now to form and join unions, and these rights are protected by state and federal laws. However, there are no current rules that govern how that may or may not happen. The Board of Agriculture believes that this does not represent a free and fair process to determine if farm workers wish or wish not to form a union. And because of that, the Board of Agriculture passed this resolution to support Measure 3258, the concept of removing the ag exemption from the state labor rules. Further comments I'd like to make are, I think the issue needs to get down to where what is in the best interest of the worker, not as what is in the best interest necessarily of the employer or the unions, but what is in the best interest of the worker. The control of the process should be in the hands of the worker, where they can choose or not to become unionized or vote to join a union or have their workplace become unionized. This rule would put rules in place for the workers, the employers, and the unions on how that process would go. And I think that would be very important to have a known method of making determinations on what is right, what is wrong, and how you go about the process. As has been pointed out, there's many efforts in the past have been made to make a specific Agriculture Labor Relations Act for Oregon, and those have to date failed. And there's two major reasons for that. One good reason is that the state doesn't have the funds maybe to set up a separate entity within the state government and pay for the cost of running an organization in the state to handle. And that's one of the reasons why some of the concepts, as previously mentioned, of doing it privately or whatever, I think that erodes the legitimacy of it to go private, as has already been pointed out. The cost is and bureaucracy of it is one of the issues. The biggest issue maybe is that the unions and the employers have not been able to agree, and I guess most of us would have to understand that maybe that's not going to happen in the near future. It's up to the state legislature and the people of Oregon to determine the direction of this issue. The best answer, as what has been already pointed out today, is to provide the same protections for agricultural workers as other workers of the state of Oregon and in the United States. This maybe not solve every little issue. There's, I think the unions have some legitimate questions. There's some special things in agriculture that need to be addressed differently than other. The employers have the same questions. There's some things in agriculture that are different than others. But I think you can make that same argument for many other industries in the state of Oregon, that for certain reasons, certain parts of the economy of Oregon needs to be treated a little different than something else. I think we need to deal with those issues as we go along. But do we just continue to argue about should we or should we not have a full-blown Agriculture Labor Relations Act or not, and still leave agriculture workers out there with actually no rules at all? And the prospect of getting a comprehensive bill for just agriculture is pretty slim. I think it's time that we give the agricultural workers what they deserve, a set of rules now that are the same as everybody else, and not treat them as something less than everybody else in the state. And for those reasons, I urge very much the support of 3258. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel?
Go ahead, ladies.
Yeah. Representative Byer.
Thank you. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Madam Chair, for being here to testify. And I wish it was this simple. But I guess we all know that binding arbitration is one of the big sticking points in this issue, and one of the things I have learned is that in California we have over 300 union elections sitting on a shelf that aren't being negotiated. And so I guess my question is, what is different in Oregon, what is different in this bill or in the laws that would prevent that from happening here?
Well, I don't know why we have to consider that we're going to automatically be the same as California. We don't have, we have not had the worker uprisings for demanding of contracts in Oregon that maybe was seen in California. And I would like to see that there be a concern and show that there's actually contracts not getting signed that maybe should be, and some methods need to be looked in an Oregon examples rather than look to some other state for the examples of why we should be doing something differently than everybody else. California is the only one, and they've not shown that that's going to work in California either yet.
Each one wants to answer.
May I respond?
You're going to run out of time.
Again, I'm Kirk Peterson. I'd like to respond to that, please. In California, it's a different culture than we have here. There's also a host of reasons why collective bargaining agreements have not been reached. You've been offered in the past, you know, or will be offered later today, one view of why that might have taken place. That pessimistic presumption that employers bargain in bad faith. As a labor law practitioner, there are a host of reasons why collective bargaining agreements may not be reached. It's affected by what each party brings to the table, what each party looks at as the economic realities, how close they've kept themselves grounded in realities. In California, the United Farm Workers has made an unwavering decision that in every contract negotiations, it wants to be the sole hiring hall for union employees. They want to funnel all employees through that their own organization. That is an unwavering, and for many employers, an unreasonable demand. There's multiple reasons why each individual contract may not get resolved. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boquist?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. A question, Ken. Can you tell me, might seem odd, I had someone draw up a full book, but can you tell me who is comprised and who are the members of the Board of Agriculture and who are the two ex officio members?
The Board of Agriculture is made up of 7 producer members. They all must represent a different major commodity. I don't know that you're asking for the names of anyone, but there's 7 producer members, 2 public members, and then there's one member that is the statutory member, which is the chairman of the State Soil Water Conservation Commission, is an automatic member. The first 9 I mentioned are all appointed by the governor. The ex officios are the dean of the College of Ag Sciences at Oregon State University and the director of the Department of Agriculture.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is it still correct that no more than 5 members can be of one political party?
I'm not sure if it's. I believe it's 5 is an actual number, but yes, there's a balance. It must be at least maintained in the structure of the board. Yes.
Okay.
No one political party can have more than a given number. Yes.
Okay. One follow-up, Madam Chair. What you provided for testimony said the motion passed unanimously. Can you tell me how many members were present when this motion passed? Or maybe how many? Just ballpark.
I believe there was one member absent, but I can't remember for sure. I hadn't thought about it.
Thank you.
Representative Robles?
Yeah, I just want to follow up a little bit on Representative Byers' question. Thank you, Madam Chair. On kind of an accountability question. We get accountability up here all the time, that actual things happen and negotiation does take place in good faith and so on. From my perspective, having some kind of agreements is important. So how do we know, as a legislator, we pass something that actually the good faith is happening, they are bargaining, we're coming up with agreements? Her example about California. My concern, and you alluded to it a little bit in your testimony, was that this is a unique business, and we have a workforce that travels around from place to place, so they're not always with one employer. And so the issue that you brought up, that the farm workers in California are looking at going through a union hall, we do have other organizations that do that. I think longshoremen, some contracting, construction workers, and so on. And so the question is, how do we get that kind of understanding that we are going to come to some agreements, that there are going to be ways that everybody is served by this kind of bill?
Chair Smith, Representative Roblin, I think there are 2 responses. In California, I guess I want to take on this issue that there have been kind of widespread, you know, failure to reach agreements. There have been many, many, many success stories as well. There's a labor organization called the Christian Labor Association that has worked very hard in organizing dairies in California, and there had not been a problem reaching agreement with that union. And I think if you talk to growers I've talked to and attorneys in the area have said that that has been a very healthy, workable relationship down there. The other dynamic that's inherent in collective bargaining law is one that is very, very difficult and scary from the grower perspective is when the union has won a representation election and the employees have said that this is the union, that this is the group they want to represent them in contract negotiations, if during that process it bogs down, the union can call a strike. And one of the things that just is a lot of fear in the agriculture community, and this is part of the game of the, you know, economic muscle that both sides have. As you can imagine, what a strike during pear harvest or when you're trying to bring the berries in or whatever else may occur. And so I think that is the one inherent dynamic that brings you toward agreement, and that is a tool that UFW has, that Pacoon or any other union in Oregon would have if this law is put in place. And that's one that, again, is a very major concession and concern from the agricultural industry. That being said, I think that we're open to ways to look at this. I agree with what Ken and Kirk have said, that this is Oregon. This is a different state. This is a different process. And I think to assume failure before starting is we're not going to get anywhere there. I don't think that dynamics, that's the way things will work. I think the collective bargaining process is when you have two parties, a union that truly does represent the employees and an employer that wants to get the job done, you're going to reach an agreement. It happens in a lot of industries. That being said, if there is an issue, we are always willing to continue to talk and address and relook at how we may address this issue. But I will say that the issue of mandatory binding arbitration, where you have a third party impose contractual provisions in agriculture, is in private industry, is very, very difficult concept, and it's one that in California is being constitutionally challenged right now. And I believe that the courts are going to turn that out as an unconstitutional impingement on freedom of contract. So I don't think we ought to buy into this as the panacea. Let's get this put in place. Let's try it here in Oregon. Let's work towards success. And where there are problems, let's come back and look at it again. But again, the issue that's before you today is do we continue to allow seasons to go by without rules for the road for farm workers and farmers? Are we going to let one more session go by, two more growing seasons, before we address this issue? So that, I guess that's my response.
Thank you.
Chairman Smith, Representative Roman, I think on that same issue, Tim alluded to the strikes issue. 3258 does not eliminate the ability of the workers to strike. It does not eliminate the ability of a secondary boycott. The same type of activity that brought pressure to bear on NORPAC or could on any other company in the state of Oregon. Those tools are still there, but we believe with a set of good rules that it puts everybody in a line to go through the process. And I believe that the threat of a strike or boycott or public opinion and everything else will bring up Oregon employers to bargain faithfully. And if that doesn't occur, then I think it's time to come back and you can deal with it at that time. But I don't want to be dealing with this before we see that there is really a problem.
Thank you. One follow-up.
Okay. Real quick follow-up on that one. So I guess what I'm hearing, if we aren't seeing something working, is the issue of first-time contract binding arbitration only, and then it goes back after that, something that we've looked at?
I would think so. I mean, issues come to you new all the time, and I think that's one reason why it's there. The other part of this particular issue that you're dealing with today deals only with agriculture by removing the exemption. Once you start talking about these other issues, you're talking about all other industries too, and they're going to want to weigh in on those issues are going to affect them too, unless we're talking about a isolated agriculture collective bargaining bill, which we've not been able to get and doesn't look like we can get. I think the way to work it with agriculture is to bring them in with everybody else. And if those issues are important, maybe they're important for everybody and deal with those as a separate issue. This is bringing agriculture on board, and then we can deal with the other issues that come up or specific ag issues as they come along.
Thank you.
Quick one.
Yeah, no, that's okay. What I want to do is get through this panel, do the other panel, have the people who've testified, and then maybe bring them up if you have further questions at the end.
Okay.
So that's kind of the format. So
just real quick, Mr. Peterson, in your testimony, you talk about the exception in Oregon for public safety reasons, the mandatory binding interest arbitration. So this must be explicitly stated somewhere in the existing law, right, that these certain public employees have the mandatory binding interest arbitration right.
It's in the Public Sector Collective Bargaining Act, which is Chapter 243.
Okay. Thank you.
But the reason is the compelling public safety aspect has made it the policy choice that they aren't eligible to strike.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you'll stick around, I'd like to call Marty Myers, Mark Dickman, and Barry Bishop. This is the second panel, and then I'll go public testimony. Good morning, Jim.
Morning.
Good morning. Go ahead. Whoever wants to start.
Okay, I'll start.
Right.
Chair Smith and members of the committee, my name's Marty Myers, and I'm the general manager of Three Mile Canyon Farms in Boardman, Oregon. I appreciate this opportunity to testify in favor of House Bill 3258 and tell you why this bill is important to workers, growers, and all of Oregon's agricultural economy. I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian. I'm a farmer, a businessman, and an optimist. I suppose it's easy to be cynical and say that in today's economy, you have to be an optimist to be a farmer. But I have a different view. I believe that Oregon agriculture can play a significant role in creating a more promising future. A future with a high-performing economy that will generate sustainable levels of wealth for people living in rural and urban communities, so that we can afford the high level of educational, health, and public safety services that Oregonians demand and deserve. That's why I am supporting House Bill 3258. This proposal is more than a labor management tool. It is a key component in the strategy that promotes a successful and sustainable Oregon agricultural sector. Some people think that sustainability is just about the environment. I agree in part. After all, as farmers, we respect the earth, protect habitats, and hate waste. But to me, a sustainable business model merges economic, social, and environmental values. So at Three Mile Canyon Farms, we strive to treat people, the land, and animals with respect. And we put those principles to work by being an equal opportunity employer, by paying a living wage with health benefits, and by creating a safe and healthy workplace. We respect our workers, and we expect them to perform a high level of responsibility. That's why it's easy for me to sign on to a system that allows workers to choose whether to belong or not to belong to a union of their own choosing, and to sign on to a system where contracts are bargained for in a fair manner and according to established rules. It's easy for me to accept that in our agricultural workplace, we have a system that has the integrity and full force of state law, just like the familiar system that would be established by House Bill 3258, which would remove the outdated exemption for agriculture and treat farm workers the same as every other Oregon worker. As it stands today, farm labor relations are like the World Wrestling Federation, a world without rules where theatrics, bluster, and loudmouth lies rule the day, often hijacking the welfare of workers and sacrificing the reputation of Oregon's branded products. Without the order and fairness that House Bill 3258 would bring to the marketplace, responsible growers will continue to be subjected to a series of irresponsible actions that no one in this building could believe is good for Oregon. Our workers will be intimidated. Our supply chain customers will be bullied. Our business and banking relationships will be interfered with. Our regulatory agencies will be manipulated and misled. Our consuming public will be lied to and frightened about the quality of Oregon products. It's happening right now, and it must be stopped in Oregon's agricultural economy if it's to reach its full potential for Oregon. This session, I believe that order, fairness, and integrity can be achieved. The reality is that a perfect law may not be written. So we must avoid letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. House Bill 3258 is a good and familiar step forward by extending the same rules that cover all other Oregon workers to Oregon's farm workers. It would make a world of difference at Three Mile Canyon Farms, and that's why I'm here today urging you to support this measure. As the best bill that can be passed by this session to help Oregon farm workers, Oregon growers, and the Oregon economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Mark Dickman. I'm here this morning in support of House Bill 3258. I farm east of Mount Angel. My company, Dickman Farms, is owned and operated by my wife and I, along with my parents, my brother and his wife, and their oldest son. Currently, we operate about 1,100 acres, producing green beans, sweet corn, cauliflower, and peas, all for the processing industry, in rotation with seed crops like tall fescue and perennial ryegrass. I don't need to remind you of the risk and the uncertainty associated with farming. Farmers have always had to worry about the uncertainty of weather, disease, and pestilence. Today, we also must be concerned with a world marketplace where our competition is not only the farmer across the road or in the next state, but anywhere in the world. Managing risk and uncertainty of all of these forces takes a great deal of my time. It's with the desire to bring some certainty and reliability to Oregon agriculture and to the people who depend on it for a livelihood that I come before you today to urge your support of House Bill 3258. We work hard to offer our workers good working conditions, a fair wage, and stable employment. Yet the marketplace often doesn't understand this because the stability and protection of Oregon's collective bargaining laws do not extend to farm employees or to employers like me. Even though I and my employees may have a perfect relationship, we can't prove it because no mechanism exists. Furthermore, my employees and I have no protection from the actions of third parties that represent neither I nor my workers. Whether or not Oregon's farmers and their employers all need collective bargaining as a tool to strengthen the employer-employee relationship is questionable. But there is no doubt our workers, as well as my fellow Oregon farmers, deserve it as an option. Furthermore, it will eliminate the catch-22 we find ourselves in as we talk to our customers. Do your employees have the right to collectively bargain? Folks in faraway places don't care much whether Oregon law authorizes it or provides a framework to define how it should be done. They just hear it's a process being denied to our workers. That harms all of Oregon agriculture. My position in support of House Bill 3258 is not without careful consideration. Like most of my neighbors, I have had involvement in farm labor and farm worker issues for many years. I've had some real-time experiences and some time to think about things. I'll share one example, the private agreement between Norpak Foods and Pecun from 2002 through 2004. I was chairman of the board of Norpak when I and my fellow farmers agreed to try and bring some order and reasonable rules to the issue. Our farm was one of the 21 volunteer farms who stepped up and said we'd allow collective bargaining on our farms, even though the law didn't require it, if we could work out some reasonable ground rules. because we couldn't find common ground for those reasonable rules, no farm workers on these 21 farms ever had the opportunity to vote on organizing. The agreement expired at the end of 2004, and it was not renewed by Picayune. We learned that creating clear and accountable rules are necessary, and the ultimate process of collective bargaining, whether or not it may affect your own employees and farm, is a process to be understood and managed, just like any other business issue. I believe the entire state of Oregon can extend our grand experiment by removing the ag exemption. While these rules may not be perfect, they are better than no rules at all. They give me a measure of stability and help reduce the uncertainty in at least one area on my farm. I'm very proud of my role in producing the safe, wholesome food and other agricultural products that consumers around the world not only want but need. I'd like to know that our company can withstand some of the risks that are out there in the agricultural world and be here another 75 years as a responsible and reliable employer, tenant, neighbor, and producer. Adoption of 3258 will add to our chances of achieving that goal. And I urge you to send it to the floor of the House. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Mr. Beshear?
Chair Smith and members of the committee, my name is Barry Beshue. I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I farm near Boring, Oregon, and raise berries, pumpkins, flowers, and nursery stock. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 3258. Oregon Farm Bureau represents about 9,000 family farms in Oregon and is the largest grassroots grower organization in the state. Our policy supports collective bargaining for agriculture, and getting that policy in place with as diverse a group of farmers as we have was no easy task. We engaged in grassroots discussion of this issue throughout the state. These discussions culminated in our House of Delegates meeting, where representatives from diverse operations came together from throughout the state to vote on our statewide policy. I have personally spent years working on this issue and am proud that our membership understands how critical it is to the health of the agricultural economy. In the late 90s, we worked hard to address the collective bargaining issues that arose out of Oregon Roses. It was during this discussion that we determined to redouble our efforts to address the issue by supporting a law that would extend collective bargaining process in agriculture for the first time. In 2002 and in 2003, we tried to pass fair and reasonable legislation that would resolve this issue. During the 2003 session, a group of us growers met almost weekly, and sometimes more often, to provide guidance for the team of negotiators that worked with labor to try and negotiate a final bill. Much of our frustration has been borne by the continual moving of goalposts by the people outside of agriculture trying to drive this process. Although I am disappointed that we could not reach an agreement, I continue to believe that we must resolve this, and our organization remains poised to get the job done. House Bill 3258 is a good bill. It removes the agricultural exemption in Oregon's collective bargaining law and treats agriculture like any other industry. We need a statutory framework to protect the rights of Oregon's farm workers and its farmers. Let's not confuse an Oregon solution with a broader national political activist strategy. I employ several people on my farm. Many of them have been with me for more than 20 years. They work hard and take an active interest and pride in the farm and in their critical role to its success. I believe that they are representative of many farm workers across the state. They have a right to discuss the conditions of their work and their salary, and a right to decide if they want to formalize that representation by collectively bargaining with their employers. In doing so, they deserve the ability to determine their own fate with full information and the right to a secret ballot. It is fundamental to freedom of choice and a basic right extended to all other workers in the state. To assume farm workers deserve less borders on arrogance and discriminates against them because they chose agriculture as a line of work. Farmers also need the protection of a framework and the ability to educate their customers as to the protections and rights extended to their employees. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you today and urge you to pass this bill on to the House and be happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've got 15 people to testify, so I'm going to have to try to move us along, I think, but maybe I can make this work. Michael Dale, Ramon Ramirez, and Leo Degar Vallejo. Degario. Sorry, I'm saying these names incorrectly. I called four names. Three names. Okay. You're the one who's been smiling the whole time. Why are you laughing? I saw your back. Here is why. For the record, you want to state your name?
Erica Steinbauer.
What was it?
Erica Steinbauer.
Erica Steinbauer. Okay. Thank you. Please, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dale. I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest Workers Justice Project. I've worked for about 30 years in Oregon representing farm workers, mostly in the legal services frame, but the last several years I've been working for the Northwest Workers Justice Project. I'm here to urge that you not move House Bill 3258 to the floor. You know, it sounds good to say, let's treat farm workers like everyone else. Now, if we were talking about moving all exceptionalism for farm workers, eliminating the exemption from overtime, the special treatment for occupational health and safety, a variety of other laws, then that might be worth considering. But what we're doing here is proposing a bill that looks like we're doing something about collective bargaining, but actually is taking a step backwards in collective bargaining. 3258 is unworkable in agriculture, and its proponents know this. We've negotiated long and hard about the particular aspects, and in good faith on both sides. And we came pretty close a couple of years ago, but we weren't able to close the gap. It's my hope that soon we will. But this bill is a non-starter in terms either of its workability or its acceptability to farm workers, their advocates, and ultimately the governor of the state. Why is it unworkable? In treating Oregon's farm workers, quote, like everyone else, what we're doing is throwing these problems into the ERB. The ERB primarily regulates public employment. It has some function with respect to private employees that are too small for the National Labor Relations Act to cover. However, the number of instances in which that comes up are estimated by the ERB to be about one time a year. So primarily we're talking about public employees. That's a very different context than out on the farm with temporary workers. The ERB lacks language capacity. It lacks the staffing to go out and run elections in the time frames that would be necessary. In its current procedures, not inappropriately given what it has to deal with, the kinds of employees it has to deal with. For example, it takes months to settle the questions of the size of the bargaining unit and who is eligible to vote and who isn't. Ballots are sent by mail. Now, this would be interesting in a farm labor camp where there's one mailbox controlled, generally speaking, by the employer. Here, pass these ballots out. Have them returned. These procedures will simply not work in agriculture. We've been told that, well, we could write new rules and we could retool and we could hire bilingual staff. Well, yes, I suppose we could. All of that takes money. In the last several biennia, the staff of the ERB has been cut, its funding has been cut, and the prospects of renewing that funding, much less providing additional funding to implement a new set of rules, a new set of procedures, is simply not likely to be forthcoming in this session of the legislature. Thank you. 1989, it was estimated that it would take $200,000 per biennium to implement collective bargaining in agriculture. It can't have gotten cheaper in the last 10 years, and I'm not sure where those resources are coming from. Even if all these matters could be resolved, there's one fundamental issue that would remain, and it's the one that's been alluded to, and that is, it is not what farm workers want is not the chance to vote. What they want is better conditions, more job security, and a union contract. This system will not produce that. That's been the history in California. I would agree that Oregonians are different than Californians, but I would say that human nature is human nature. And we know from our experience negotiating with agriculture that there are farmers who are diehard, religious, anti-union in their orientation. They have every right to have that political perspective. However, we can expect that when bargaining comes on their farm, it will be long and tough. And think about the position that a farm worker would be in. If you vote for union, let's say, I won't even take the strawberry crop, which is pretty fast, or the cherry crop, but let's take pears, that was alluded to. Pear harvest lasts about 6 weeks. Now, you don't hold an election, you don't request an election the first day workers arrive. There's a process of organizing and choosing to go forward with a union election. Then you have to have an election. The results have to be certified, and then you begin to bargain. In the very best of scenarios, even with revised regulations and adequate staffing, you would be at the end of the seasonal employment of workers by the time that you ever sat down to bargain. What is your leverage at that point? Well, we're told this act doesn't bar the right to strike. Do you strike as the camp is closing, or do you wait till the next year to come back? But if you don't have a contract with rights to recall, you don't have any right to come back. You're a temporary employee. Now, it would be a violation of law to not hire you back specifically because you supported the union, but how would you prove that? Particularly if the whole crew was replaced. How would you prove that? And how would you then exercise that economic power we talked about? The answer is, you would not, because you have no economic power. You have no way to close the deal. And that's the reason why we have taken the position that mandatory arbitration, particularly in the first contract, is a critical piece of any farm labor collective bargaining bill that we would support. That is the governor's position. The governor has said he will veto any bill that does not include that. Now, if agriculture wants a collective bargaining bill, it's been said that we won't sit down and bargain. We've made our position very clear. If agriculture will accept the governor's framework for collective bargaining in agriculture, we will sit down and negotiate, and we think that this could be worked out. But they have refused to do that. Moving this bill forward is not helpful to that process. It will go nowhere. It's a waste of the legislature's time. It's a waste of everybody's time in this room. We've been down this road before. It feels like Groundhog's Day all over again. There's no point in it. This committee should end this charade of purporting to do something about collective bargaining and let this bill die here and now. Thank you,
Mr. Ramirez. Is that right? Did I say that right? Okay. Thank you. And Eric is going to translate for you. Or is she? Thank you.
Señores miembros de la mesa, mi nombre es Leodegario Vallejo y vengo a dar mi testimonio acerca de la propuesta HB 2258.
My name is Leodegario Vallejo and I've come to give my testimony on the proposal HB 3258.
Señores, yo como campesino quiero decirles que esta propuesta está generalizando en tratar de que todos los trabajadores o ciertas clases de trabajadores trabajen bajo este convenio.
As a farm worker, I want to tell you that this proposal generalizes and that it puts all workers or it treats all workers the same. It puts them under the same rules.
No se está tomando en cuenta que el trabajo del campesino es muy diferente a muchos otros.
And it doesn't take into account that the work of a farm worker is very different from other work.
Yo pienso que cómo entonces se pretende implementar esto con los trabajadores agrícolas, con otros trabajos, siendo de que son trabajos tan diferentes. Los campesinos realizamos o levantamos diferentes clases de cosechas durante el año.
I wonder then how this law would be implemented with agricultural workers since the work is so different from other work. Farm workers pick different harvests during the year.
Hay cosechas que tienen una duración solamente de unas cuantas semanas, y de acuerdo a esta propuesta, un proceso para que los campesinos tengamos o trabajemos bajo las reglas de esta propuesta sería de una duración no menos de un mes.
There, we pick and harvest that have a duration of only a few weeks, but according to this proposal, for farm workers to work under these rules, we would have an election process with a duration of not less than a month.
Para entonces, yo o muchos trabajadores más, ya no estaríamos en el mismo trabajo ni en el mismo lugar.
But by then, we the workers wouldn't even be at the same work or in the same place.
Me pregunto entonces, ¿cómo se pretende llevar a cabo esta regla?
So I asked, for whom would these rules apply, or how would you bring this into effect?
Obligadamente necesitamos tener los campesinos un arbitraje mandatorio que obligue a ambos lados a llegar a un acuerdo.
We also need to have mandatory binding arbitration that would oblige both sides to reach a contract.
El tiempo trabajando en el campo me ha enseñado que muchas de estas propuestas que se han trabajado teóricamente y en una mesa nunca funcionarán bien en lo práctico y menos con los trabajos del campo como los que realizamos los campesinos.
Time has taught me that many of these proposals that seem to work theoretically or when they're on the table never work well in practice, and even less so in agricultural work that we the farm workers do.
Los campesinos necesitamos que la agencia que maneja este proyecto tome en cuenta que deben de tener una persona que entienda nuestra situación, posiblemente que viva nuestra situación y que posiblemente entienda nuestra lengua o lo hable.
We the farm workers would need the agency managing this project to take into account that they should have a person or staff that understands our situation or has lived in our same situation and understands or speaks our language.
Además, esta propuesta pretende eliminar algunos principios que para nosotros los campesinos son muy importantes como en los convenios colectivos.
Furthermore, this proposal would eliminate some principles that are very important to us as farm workers in collective bargaining.
Como el mantener el poder de negociar con los patrones, un proceso de representación justo y oportuno, ser independientes de la manipulación política, incluir un mecanismo justo, oportuno y eficaz, y tener recursos suficientes o bastante apoyo para permitir su implantación y ejecución.
We need a proposal that lets us maintain our power to negotiate with our employers, have a fair and timely representation process, be independent from political manipulation, have a fair and effective way to resolve problems, and have enough resources and support for its implementation.
Son unas de las razones por las que yo estoy aquí y de acuerdo que se que yo no estoy de acuerdo que se aplique esta propuesta que quitaría también el poder de realizar huelgas y boicoteos, que son nuestras únicas armas que tenemos los campesinos, y que por décadas estas acciones han hecho grandes cambios en la historia del mundo entero. ¿O es que acaso pretendemos detener el rumbo de la historia?
So these are some of the reasons I'm here, and I'm not in agreement with this proposal, because it would also limit our power in strike and boycott, and that has been our only arms or power that we as farm workers have had, and for decades these actions have made great changes in world history. So I wonder if we're trying to stop the course of history.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Ramirez?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union, PECUN, and on behalf of our 5,000 member, we wish to strongly oppose House Bill 3258. I will cut my testimony short. I've introduced the testimony. I just want to say that any collective bargaining law or system must satisfy, we believe, five principles in order to provide a path to a contract and to be effective for farm workers. The first three we think must meet or fulfill the governor's principles articulated in his June 2004 letter, which is included in the testimony, which is also in support of the Employee Freedom of Choice Act, which spells out that that there must be mandatory binding arbitration on first contracts. There also has to be a timely process for verifying worker support for union card check elections and employee neutrality, or enhances remedies to better protect workers against anti-union retaliation by employers. We also feel that that farm workers must maintain its bargaining power by not restricting the right to strike except for part of the contract arbitration process, and that any law or any system has got to have adequate resources for prompt enforcement. We believe that House Bill 3258 does not fulfill any of these principles. HB 3258 would place farm workers under the existing Oregon Collective Bargaining Law, ORS Chapter 663, without any modifications. ORS 663 is designed for workforce which is generally stable and does not take in consideration the seasonal nature of farm labor. It also would place the jurisdiction of farm worker collective bargaining under the ERB. The ERB has no capacity, expertise, or fundings to take up some such critical responsibilities. Similar proposal, HB 4025, was vetoed in April of 2002 by Governor Kitzhaber, who characterized it as unbalanced and lacking the resources and personnel necessary for implementation. For these reasons, we urge the committee to reject this House bill. I just want to make a couple comments. And there's been a couple of testimonies raising that labor isn't interested in negotiating. I think that's an unfair characterization of what has happened. I think Timber Nasik, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau, eloquently just explained a process of several years that took place in which we were involved in that, and many of those sessions and many of those discussions and negotiations. To come up here and say that the labor is not willing or interested is just not true. The last session, a similar bill like this was introduced, in which there was a work committee formed in which we participated. The governor stepped in, and we went into about a four-month process of discussion and negotiation, and I think prior testimony has indicated that they were very successful. I also think that what we have here is a white elephant in front of us, and it's called, and it's an issue that is a sticking point of what these discussions have not been able to get all the forces together, all the people that have been discussing in this room to agree upon, and that's binding arbitration. That's the main issue. Why? That's the sticking issue. That's why we're here. The other thing I would like to say for the record is that the fact that we entered negotiations with the agriculture industry on trying to develop a framework for collective bargaining is a compromise for farm workers, because for years and years and years we have not been there hasn't been any we haven't been covered by any the National Labor Relations Act or the state law, right? And we have our own opinions about that, and I'm willing to share that later on, and I'll try to get materials so that you can understand why that has happened, right? I don't believe it's because our country was agrarian or agriculture was too small. I think it was racism, clear and simple. I would say that the fact that we're here negotiating and that we're testifying to here today is we're willing to accept a collective bargaining process or a law, right, that includes the governor's principles is in itself a compromise, because we're giving up the very, very arm, I would say, that got us here in the first place, which is the boycott. And without the boycott, we wouldn't even be here, right? The whole issue of farm workers and farm worker justice was brought about through the boycott, and it raised a lot of awareness, right? And I think it's also done a lot of good for agriculture. But I would be here to say that I find it really ironic that that the industry, agriculture industry, can come and testify today that they support a collective bargaining law. But under this bill, farm workers would never get a contract, because we would never have the chance to vote within that 45-day period under the herb. You know, we've stated that there's crops are, you know, we have a strawberry crop that lasts about, you know, 3 weeks. We have, you know, we have cane berries that last maybe at the most a month, cucumbers that last 3 weeks. How would we get an election done in that amount of period? So I find it really ironic. But even stating that, you know, we are willing to sit down with industry, but not to rehash, you know, issues that have been raised over the last two or three sessions, because we've done that, right? I think what we need to do is sit down and say, okay, the issue is binding arbitration, and let's get down to discussing how we can make it work here in the state of Oregon. Forget California, forget every place else. Let's talk about an Oregon model.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Edward, Eduardo, Congo, Noreen Goplin, and Edwin Hildegard. Now, because we're running out of time, I'm going to have to limit you to 3 minutes. Thank you very much. You want to go?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I am the chairman of the Salem-Kaiser Coalition for Equality. The Coalition for Equality is formed by 11 community organizations here in the Willamette Valley, starting with the Salem-Kaiser NAACP chapter, Mano a Mano Family Center, CAUSA, or Pro-Immigrant Rights Coalition of Oregon, 100 Good People, Latinos Unidos Siempre, our youth organization, Willamette University Mecha Students, the Salem-Kaiser NAACP Youth Chapter, Village Elders, the Migrant and Bilingual Parents Advocacy Group of the Salem-Kaiser School District, Citizens for Livable Community, and PECUN, our largest Farm Workers Union of Oregon with over 5,000 members. I am here this morning to testify against House Bill 3258. This bill unfairly puts Oregon farm workers under the public employee collective bargaining law. At first glance, this bill looks like a good deal for farm workers, but it does not take into account that farm laboring is a different kind of industry from all other industries. One example, as many people already pointed out, is seasonal harvesting time. And I think that Ramon just talked referring to that. So I will limit my comments to...
Thank you, because you have about a minute and a half.
Yes. That this bill does not cover the principles supported by the governor, by Governor Keith Kulongoski, such a mandatory binding invitation on collective bargaining. And that ensures that if both sides cannot come to an agreement during negotiations, farm workers are guaranteed a path to a contract. If farm workers are being asked to give up their only leverage they have, which is the strike or boycott, then they need to be guaranteed a contract. And this bill will never lead to a union contract for farm workers. This proposal is a sophisticated attack on farm workers in Oregon, many of them who are undocumented workers, the same undocumented workers who have been attacked here in our 2005 legislative session. We must not forget that these workers are contributing greatly to our Oregon economy, and I gave you some information regarding the fact that undocumented farm workers and undocumented workers, they contribute greatly to our social security and our tax system, and they never collect any of those monies back. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
My name is Noreen Goflin, and I'm the director of Lutheran Advocacy Ministry of Oregon, and I speak in support of House Bill 3258. Today you have before you an issue that's been seen years of inaction, testimony on bills, complex negotiations, then stalemates, then closed-door negotiations with the participation of two governors, further testimony on bills, then stalemate and inaction. Through the protracted discussions, the essential needs of individual growers and farm workers are not being met. In a more simple construct, this bill seeks to eliminate the exclusion of agricultural labor under the State Labor Relations Act. And it's a bill that will impact farm workers and growers from Medford to Hood River, Klamath Falls to Milton Freewater, Cornelius to Madras. It'll impact fruits and vegetables, but grains, dairy, nursery stock, grapes, livestock, and fiber. And it provides a legal framework under which organizations, large organizations, unions, small growers, association of workers, and individuals can benefit. The Oregon Synod of the Lutheran Church in America has been active participant in the dialogue for several years now. We have tried to understand the issues, the complexities inherent in addressing the needs of growers, farm workers, and the rural communities of which they're a part. We respect the rights of individuals to pursue collective bargaining. We've been concerned about the lack of legal protections for agricultural workers to organize. We have been equally concerned about the impact on growers when a legal framework does not exist through which management and labor can resolve their issues.
Ms. Goflin, you have about
yes.
a minute left.
Thank you.
To read it would just take too long.
Very good. And I'll just go through with a couple of examples, okay. Because I do want to share that we have had many conversations with farm workers, and many of them are concerned about the focus on that very short period of time during which we do have harvest in several crops, because many of them work 9 to 10 months out of the year. Several of them, many of them, work for, are not part of what we have seen as the migratory stream, but indeed that migratory stream is within Oregon and a little bit in Washington, where their workplace may be in three counties and they migrate amongst them. There are many other issues that impact, we're concerned about, but essentially the real dilemma is to encourage the cooperation between growers and workers and between their organizations to secure effective agreements. Let's not lose this opportunity that this bill provides in at least beginning to establish a framework. Thank you.
Thank you. You finished right on time. Mr. Hilgarter?
Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on today. And I support the HB 3258. I work on California before for 14 years, and I work on a union all the time, so I know how they work. And I working here in Oregon for almost 12 years and 11 years, and I and my other friends and workers, they feel comfortable working. So, and we saw, you know, sometimes when we picking strawberries or some people don't, or almost the most of the people don't feel comfortable when see people on the road, you know, try to push into to talk to the people, to the union people. So I like to testimony, you know, we need to have the right to choose if we need to union or we doesn't need. So we need to have the right to vote if we need it or not. So that's why I come into this five, and I support the law, the HB 3258. So thank you.
Any questions for this panel? None. Thank you very much. Thank you for being so nice. Reverend Wilties? Lynn Lundquist? And Bob Terry? As you can tell, we have the timer going, so good morning and welcome. Reverend Wilkie, I believe, was first.
That's Whitty.
I'm sorry. With the name Smith, I say that often.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Reverend Stephen Whitty. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Farm Worker Ministry, which is celebrating our 20th year working in the state of Oregon on behalf of farm workers. I'll be rather brief. The question about farm workers and the problems with their employers goes back millennia. In the book of James, it says, "Listen, the wages of laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." So this is not a new problem. I really don't understand why we're here today, given the similar bills that have been put forth in the past and have been vetoed. I also find it interesting that none of the groups that are proposing this law are farm workers or their unions. It's all industry. It's the big industry groups. So I think that in place calls us into question, because I think what we want to be about in the state of Oregon is about justice. And quite frankly, I think that there have been attempts on behalf of the unions to bring about working out a reasonable solution. It's going to be difficult. But I think the main thing that that is really unfortunate is that, you know, we're asking farm workers to buy into something that we've already, that farm workers unions have already stated will not work for farm workers. So in effect, we're putting them under a law that we know that isn't going to work ahead of time. So to me, it makes a lot more sense to propose a law with input on both sides, so everybody has a chance going into it, rather than coming back and trying to cobble up something that we know was not going to work in the first place. I mean, this has been debated and debated and debated. And I think, you know, and this flies in the fact that, flies in the face that, you know, why are we spending the time on it, you know, when it's not a bipartisan, it's not a, you know, a bilateral group coming together and trying to work out what's best. So I really call the question of why this is being proposed here and now, and I have to say some of the things I've heard this morning, I quite frankly question the veracity of some of the statements that have been said. So, with that, you have my written testimony, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Lynn Lundquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. Most of you are familiar with our association, but we are often thought of as just representing large businesses. That is not true. We represent businesses across the state from places such as Fort Rock, North Powder, Brothers, and don't have anybody in Sisters, but Seneca and Boardman, those kind of places. And you might wonder why a business association that isn't just strictly agriculture would be here. It's simply this, and I'll just try to make one point this morning. There needs to In the business world, you need to have some certainty in order to be successful. And without some degree of certainty, it's very, very difficult to make your investments return the profit that they should in that kind of an atmosphere. And I've been a part, obviously, of the process. I have watched the process, the political process here, for a number of years. And it is true there have been some very, very serious endeavors to make that happen. I think the difficulty, or maybe the problem we've had along the line, is simply this. With all due respect to the political process and the fact that we should have come out with the very best bill possible, there are times when we say we need to do something. To work for utopia becomes a losing battle. And I've been in part of those kind of battles. And at some point it comes to say, okay, this may not be the perfect outcome, but at least it starts to get some certainty to the process for both the workers and for the employers. I think I'll just finish it by saying this. Using an agricultural analysis, I can tell you, whether it's the worker's standpoint or from the grower's standpoint, that productivity less than what we might like to have for a given crop is significantly better than a drought or a hailstorm or a freeze that wipes out the crop completely. The point is simply, we need to have some sort of certainty about this process, and with all due respect to the workers who particularly are saying that this is not the perfect process, and employers as well, I think it's time to draw some sort of a certainty as a foundation and then move forward with that.
Thank you. Bob Terry.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. I am a farmer, and I am here as part of the agricultural industry because agriculture is an industry today. So we understand our problems and the issues that we're dealing with, and we do need the stability. In our farm, about a little better than 50% of our employees are employed year-round. So it isn't just the three-week workers or the six-week workers or the four-week workers. Many of us in agriculture do employ year-round. Most of our employees, or a good portion of our employees at least, do come from Mexico or other places in the world to come to work for us. They're good employees, and they return to us each year. They wouldn't return to us if they didn't feel they were getting a fair deal and they were happy. But we do need the stability of 3258 that we provide to our industry and to our businesses. It is a business, even though it is agriculture. I would also offer to you the thought that one of the reasons why agriculture has been exempted in years past is because our products are perishable. Nursery products are perishable. If they're not moved in a crop year that they're grown for, then you have to do something with them. Usually they end up on the burn pile or in the dump pile. Everything can't be moved on to the next product size and have a market for it, as one might want to suspect. When we talk to our business bankers and talk about our crop year finances and our loans, one of the things they're concerned with is agricultural labor. It's certainly a question that comes up every year. So we do need stability into our businesses. I've heard the testimony this morning, like this gentleman. I'll turn it around the other way and say I sure question what I've been hearing, because I personally am on the farm every day and I know differently. And I like my farm and I like my business. And I will tell you that agriculture today is different than it was years ago when we and our families supported our own farms with our children. My dad had 18 brothers and sisters. That's who worked the farm. So today we employ employees because most of us have gone on to do other things in the business world and in business life that does not support the farm. So we are a business today, not like we were in years past. So I encourage you to support 3258 and take it to the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to Representative Witte. And I think Mr. Lundquist made it very clear. We do many things in this legislature, and we discuss many bills. And just because the governor has vetoed them, or we've discussed it before, and we have to start this discussion somewhere. So I hope that answers your question.
Any other questions? Well, Representative Meyer.
Madam Chair, it's not really questions, comments. So if you need to switch panels, but I certainly can sympathize with both sides of this issue. And as a wise person once said in a hearing I sat in, is that you can't force people to talk and or legislate people to talk. And I think if we could, the bill I'd like to see is a bill to lock both sides in a room and not let them come out until they've solved this, because I don't see this as the answer. I don't think it's going to work. But
thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Seeing
none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
One last panel.
Things who work for other people.
Joyce. Matt Swanson and Robert Castaneda.
Castagna.
I'm really saying the names badly. Thank you. Please go ahead, Mr. Joyce.
I'm Dick Joyce.
Joyce, okay.
I'm Dick Joyce. I own Joyce Farms in Sherwood, Oregon. I have a nursery. I have a landscape and landscape maintenance business, and used to have a lot of orchards, so I'm somewhat familiar with the seasonal aspects. My farm is not seasonal. My employees are employed year-round. I think a lot of agriculture employees are year-round. A lot of agriculture has year-round employees. I know that the issues that are brought up are primarily dealing with the nature of perishable crops, and that's always an issue because the crops have to be harvested in such a short period. Mine have to be harvested in a short period too, but a much longer short period. There are a couple of things that I wanted to just respond to that was brought up by previous panels. I guess I'm a little bit offended by being termed, tying the terms religious and diehard and anti-unionism together, as if one were religious, he's also a diehard anti-union person. Most of my employees are quite religious, and I don't know whether they're diehard union or not. But I certainly am not diehard union or anti-union, and I hate to see the terms tied together. I also know that a lot of the support for ag labor in this state has come from the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, which I assume is religious and is probably not diehard anti-union. I was also struck with the point that was made that they are very, other side is very willing to sit at the table, but there are three main things that they must have that are absolutely that they will not concede on, and that's the three items that our current governor has brought up, and that really does kind of stop the conversation. I want to thank the legislature in the last several years that has taken the bull by the horns and tried to solve this problem, only to have it sunk by our previous governors. I think that's not good. I'd like to see our governor stand as a broker rather than as so strongly taking one side or the other, particularly lining up three things that no employer group, I don't think, could possibly accept, as much as the other side says that that is the only thing that they can accept. The other issue I think that I drew real affront to was kind of when all else fails, throw in the race card. I was very disappointed to see that, and I hope that that doesn't continue to become an issue, or is even thought to be one in your minds. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Swanson?
Thank you, Chair Smith, members of the committee. My name is Matt Swanson. I'm the organizing coordinator for the Oregon AFL-CIO. I'll make my comments very brief, and I also should apologize. I don't have a written handout to give to you. I was having copier problems this morning, which happens from time to time. We are speaking this morning in opposition to House Bill 3258 for the primary reasons that it does fly in the face of those principles that we laid out working with our sister union, PUKUN, and also representing the farm workers as a piece of our national federation. I'll cut through a lot of the issues that have been raised previously, but we know that we've came very close to an agreement in the 2003 session, and this issue of binding arbitration has come up time and time again as really the sticking point. Representative Beyer, you mentioned that you wished you could find a way to lock us in a room, both sides, and come out with a deal. Well, technically, binding arbitration on the first contract would make that happen. If we think putting in this law with an entrenched side on one side and an entrenched side on the other side is just going to end up with a contract, I think that we're fooling ourselves. Something like binding arbitration, which is an alternative dispute resolution method that is quite effective, could really result in some benefits for both sides. The workers don't always win, the employers don't always win in binding arbitration, but we think this could be a positive step, and that's why it's important. Also, I wanted this to be part of my testimony, but the Employment Relations Board provided me its average timeline of representation elections. The average timeline is 79 days. Given the short timeline for growing seasons and when these types of issues must be dealt with, 79 days is not going to cut it. And with the increased workload that would be thrust upon the Employment Relations Board, that timeline could be extended. Additionally, 79 days is without any challenges. So we know that those do come up with good reason. That should be in there. But that kind of timeline will not work for agriculture employees, and we've deferred to our unions with experience in agricultural labor to put those issues forward. And as I said, we almost did come to a solution. The issue was binding arbitration. I think today is an example of why binding arbitration, locking us in a room to come out with a solution, is not a bad idea. So thank you for your time, and please consider your opposition to House Bill 3258.
Thank you. Mr. Castagna.
Thank you, Chair Smith and members of the committee. For the record, Robert J. Castagna, General Counsel and Executive Director of the Oregon Catholic Conference. The Oregon Catholic Conference represents the Catholic bishops of Oregon in service to Oregon's Catholic population of more than 425,000 Oregonians, and we are here to advance the common good for all Oregonians. Today, the Oregon Catholic Conference would like to go on record in opposition to House Bill 3258, and we are joined in that opposition by Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Our opposition is rooted in Catholic social teaching. Catholic social teaching respects and upholds and applauds the work of both farmers and farm workers. Those who grow our food should be able to make a decent living and maintain their way of life. Farmers who depend on the land for their livelihood deserve a decent return for their labor. Rural communities deserve help so that they can continue to be sources of strength and support for the way of life that enriches our nation. Our priority concern for the poor calls us to advocate especially for the needs of farm workers, whose pay is generally inadequate, whose housing and working conditions are often deplorable, and who are particularly vulnerable to exploitation. Part of Catholic social teaching is rooted in the first encyclical of the modern era of Catholic social teaching. 1891, under Pope Leo XIII, the encyclical entitled Rerum Novarum established that workers have a right to bargain and to unionize. The difficulty with this legislation is that it's a collective bargaining bill not supported by the workers. How do you take what church social teaching calls a natural human right, basically to organize, and try to impose it on the workers when the workers themselves are opposed to the policy before this legislature? It would be unjust, in our opinion, to try to impose such a solution on a natural human right to organize. Church social teaching supports both farmers and values the members of the faith community, and we have members of our faith community, faithful and valued members of our community, on both sides of this issue. But to try to impose a solution when that solution needs to come from the minds, the hearts, and the souls of both farmers and farm workers, in our opinion, would be inappropriate. So we ask you, if you can, to serve a mediating role, to look for the sign of hope. And we came up with this issue in 2002, and I looked for signs of hope. And the signs of hope I came up with in observing the history of this issue was that in 2002, agriculture was asking for collective bargaining rights for farm workers. In 1989, in another piece of legislation, agricultural workers were interested in a collective bargaining bill. So in 13 years separation, you had both interest groups asking for a collective bargaining piece of legislation. Ask both of them, and if you can serve a mediating role to have both of them come to agreement, you would serve all of us well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Bernassi, could you have to come back and answer any questions that can be marked soon of the committee? Does any of the committee have any questions or this panel before we finish? Maybe you want to make some comments on what you heard.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, thank you, first of all, for taking the time to hear this important issue, and there are a couple things I would like to address. The last comment you made is that this law is not supported by workers, and I think that really is the issue that this bill is asking, is we don't know what the workers want. We've heard what the unions and the representatives have said, but that's why this is so critical that we do something, to put something in place to find out what the workers do in fact want regarding collective bargaining. We've also heard that the system is unworkable, and I think Michael Dale made a very good point about ERB being primarily regulating public employees and lacks the language capacity, but frankly, no matter what bill we come up with, whether it's a new board or ERB or somebody, is going to have to learn how to deal with this, and so that's an issue that I think ERB is legitimately going to have to deal with here. I think one of the issues that's been raised is the timeliness in some crops that the current ERB structure and rules aren't in place for. And that's right. There is a need in agriculture to address the timeliness, and we're willing to do it. And I think ERB can do it by rule. And if they can't, we're willing to sit down here and come back next session and find out what they can and can't do. Again, I think they can. But if they can't, let's sit down then and address it, because those are legitimate concerns. In some industries, you've got very short time window that the workers are there. We've got to figure out a way to make this work as best as possible, you know, short of having God create longer harvest seasons to make sure workers are here. We need to figure out a way to address that, and we are willing to sit down and do that. One of the big things you heard is that this system will not produce outcomes because it takes elections and their time frames and everything else. Well, the problem is the approach that the unions have taken up to this point is one that you don't focus on whether the workers support it. The boycotting tactics to try and strong arm a processor to force a farmer to force a worker to submit to some agreement that the employer and the union sat down and agreed to, where is the worker in that process? And certainly collective bargaining is a process, and there are cumbersome processes inside of it, but at the heart of that process is making sure that workers have expressed what they want regarding their representation in these issues. A lot of people say, you know, democracy is a cumbersome process. Our constitutional form of government is a cumbersome process. But would we submit it to, submit it to something else? Is there a better form? I don't think so. One final comment that I'd make is that the comment about that Bakun and the governor's position is well established, and they'll sit down and talk as long as we're willing to agree to those positions. And there was some comment made that, you know, that I guess, first of all, let me say that they have interpreted what their view is of the governor's position. We have been willing, and in position statements that the Farm Bureau put out, and I believe many of you received at the beginning of session, addressed every one of those positions that the governor has stated. But we did it in a way of looking at the interests that are underlying mandatory binding arbitration, card check neutrality, and a lot of those provisions. If we lock in on that as a position, we're never going to get agreement. What we need to do is get to the underlying interests behind why unions think that mandatory binding arbitration is important, why neutrality is an issue, and get at that to come up with some other way. You've heard us, and I won't recite again all the reasons of problems with mandatory binding arbitration as it exists in California. And if we lockstep on that position and that position only, this issue will not be resolved. We've got to come up with a better way. I would ask you, what is their proposal? What is their solution? Let's see it. We've been asking for years for it, and it hasn't come through. And again, the question before you today is, are we going to allow another two growing seasons to go by without addressing this issue? All we're asking, and all this bill presents, is remove the exemption so there is some structure in place that we can go forward and workers can express their concerns and their desires about whether or not they want to be recognized. If there are some shortcomings, and there, again, the timeliness issue and some of those concerns that have been raised are real concerns and need to be addressed. We're going to do that. But to continue on as is with nothing, we're going to be back here in 2 more years, 4 more years, 6 more years in the same pace. So you have an opportunity today to address this situation. As I said, it may not be perfect, but we're willing to continue to work at it. And yes, we're willing to continue to sit down and talk. We've always been willing to sit down and talk about every issue that's been raised today. But the time of the session that we're at right now is it's time to do something or punt for another 2 years. And I would suggest it's time to act.
It's time to do some.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Hatt.
Thank you. I was just wondering if you would support this bill if it had, in effect, that removed the exemption for, say, 2 years or 5 years, in effect, a sunset on that. That way you could see if what you're saying turns out to be true or not, or revisit this issue.
Chair Smith, Representative Hass, I personally think that you know, sunsets are problematic, but I think if that was a way to move this forward, I think we would the Farm Bureau and the group would be willing to talk about that. I think that I think my view is the legislature is an automatic sunset on every law, and we can readdress it. But if that was again the one nugget to get union on board, we would certainly take it back to our group. And I don't get to decide policy of Farm Bureau and everybody else. But if that was the one issue that got in the way, I think we'd very seriously look at it to try and at least get this issue moving forward. But that's just my view.
Thank you. Did Representative Burley?
Just very quickly, what this bill does is give farm workers the same framework to work within under Chapter 663 as any other employee in the state, except for those that are specifically accepted in the public sector arena. And that includes ERB. Is that correct? And so people that are in the forest business, which is seasonal, people that are in the tourist business, which are seasonal, people that work at ski resorts, which is seasonal, they all have the same rights under 663 as the farm workers would if this passes. Is that correct?
Chair Smith, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just very briefly, Madam Chair, as Mr. Terry indicated, the great bulk of the employees in the nursery industry are, in fact, year-round. Of the 20,000 employees plus that are working today in the fields and nurseries and greenhouses in Oregon, most of those employees are year-round, and the seasonal nature of the nursery industry, that argument just does not apply. But nationally, unions are in decline. The Washington Post pegged the number at 7% of the workforce nationally in an article last Thursday, and the Employee Free Choice Act that's been mentioned to you today is just not mainstream thought. And I would submit to you that it is an effort to, in fact, turn the tables on industry and turn the balance of power that is carefully crafted in the National Labor Relations Act away from a balanced playing field to the favor of unions. Mandatory binding arbitration, card check, pretending that that's an election, employer neutrality, those things that are not mainstream thought, and it is wrong to hold Oregon farm workers hostage to something that we all know is never going to happen. The unions are, in fact, I think, a victim of their own success. When the National Labor Relations Act was first formed, we didn't have OSHA, we didn't have wage and hour laws. Today we have laws that even regulate how many restrooms, portable restrooms, you have out in the field and how far they can be from where the workers are working. So so what is the benefit to the worker then to join a union and pay dues just for the sake of the union? Or is it really for the sake of the worker? I would submit to you that it's the sake of the union, and that this is a fair and balanced law that has worked broadly and could work quite well for Oregon agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further comment, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3258. I'll open the work session on House Bill 3258. Representative Brookies.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3258 to the floor. With a due pass.
I have a motion from Representative Boquist to move House Bill 3258 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Hass?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to support this, but my sense is that unless we make some changes that don't have to be radical, there's no point in voting this to the floor, even passing it out. My sense is that we'll have difficulty in the Senate, and we already know how the governor feels. So we could vote this out of here today as is, and I think it'll be the same result as if we do nothing on this bill. So I don't understand why we wouldn't want to make some changes. Some changes the industry might not like, changes the union might not like. But I do think Bob Castagna was right that maybe our role should be more of a mediator as opposed to just sending something to the floor over to the Senate that's not going to go anywhere.
Thank you, Representative
Rosa. Yeah, I just want to say a couple things. I am a firm believer in the process of having groups negotiate and work things out. I have been very frustrated, as I know a lot of people sitting in this room have, over the inability to get some of those things to happen. I am one of those people who will probably vote for this, with reserving the right to change that vote when it gets to the floor, because I think we do need to have the discussion. I think we need to do the right kinds of things for people. I am convinced that agricultural activity is very different than some of the other people that are going to be regulated by this law. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't get started and do something. So I have this confliction, and I kind of agree with Mark's comments
you
made earlier.
Thank you very much. Representative Byer?
That's fine.
Ahead,
okay. thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to support this bill, but I just don't see it working, even if it could get out of the building. I think unless all parties are wanting to make this work, when it comes right down to it, it isn't going to work out in the field. And so I'm going to be a no vote today.
Thank you. Representative Wilkers?
Yes, Madam Chair. I don't disagree with any of the three other members of this panel. The difference is that, you know, this is a 30-year-old disagreement. That's what we've, for those freshmen here, this is a 30-year-old disagreement. There's been 6 years in the legislature of arguments and vetoes and everything else. We've heard Governor Tulangoski's agricultural board said unanimously we need to do something. We've heard that the Employment Relations Board, which works for the governor, is appointed by the governor, that it's either incompetent or it's not capable of doing this and needs to have changes. And then we've heard the governor may possibly veto this because he disagrees with his board or whatever it is. And, you know, I have the same reservation others, but at this point, I mean, if the governor has one board saying that we need to do this, he has another board telling him responsible for this, and then he has his three. My point, my yes vote, is we need to move this out, and then let's let the governor either fire the ag board or do something to try and make this work, or, if nothing else, we'll have at the end of this, when he vetoes it, all of them in the same room, and maybe we can lock the door for 30 years to get it done.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of the testimony I heard today, for example, this bill would impose a solution. The way I see it is it creates a framework. The solution is what's worked out at the bargaining table. I've heard actually one witness referred to this as a charade, which I take some offense in because I take this very seriously, and I think I speak for the rest of the members of this committee. As far as mediating, I don't see a proposal from the other side here, and this is a process of compromise, and the way that that works is we get two proposals or amendments or whatever and have that discussion. I don't see one. The workers are asking for collective bargaining rights. This bill gives that to them, the same as all other employees in this state, except those that are specifically excluded by state policy for public safety reasons. I'm very concerned about starting to carve out more exceptions. If we start modifying Chapter 663, that's another discussion, but we have to do that realizing that that applies to all workers in this state.
Thank you.
So I think this is a fair bill, and I support it.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Sumner?
Notwithstanding what the Senate or the governor may do with this bill, this is not a charade. This is our job to look at, approve, and get started with a framework of legislation, at least, that we could build from. I'll be a yes vote on this.
Thank you, Representative Sumner. And I just want to say I sat on the Ag and Forestry Committee my first session, 2001, and we've had this discussion, and it is ongoing. And we do. This is a framework for that debate, and I'm hopeful that we will come to some conclusion and work on these. But this is a good bill. And clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Bias?
No.
Representative Bocas? Yes. Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Pass?
Yes.
Representative Groblin? Yes. Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Chair votes yes. Having received a required number of votes, passed out of this committee to the floor, we do pass recommendation. I close the work session on House Bill 3258.
I just need to know before we drop it which one we're going to.